said Lieutenant Hornet hurriedly.
"Then you'll concede that Baron Mimbledrone single-handedly beat the armies of the Plum Pudding Country and ate their sultana?"
"I envy him, sir." The lieutenant looked at the lines again. The men were very hungry, although Rust would probably have called them sleek. Things would have been even worse if it hadn't been for the fortuitous shower of boiled lobsters on the way over.
You don't think, sir, since we have a little time in hand, we should look to the disposition of the men, sir?"
"Well, they look well disposed to me. Plucky men, eager to be at the fray."
"Yes, sir, I meant more, well, positioned, sir."
"Nothing wrong with them, man. Beautifully lined up, eh? A wall of steel poised to thrust at the black heart of the Clachian aggressor."
"Yes, sir, but, and I realise this is a remote chance, sir, it might be that while we're thrusting at the heart of the Clachian aggressor..."
"Black heart?"
Rust corrected him. "Black heart of the Clachian aggressor, sir. The arms of the Clachian aggressor, those companies there and there, sir, will sweep around in the classic pincer movement."
"The thrusting wall of steel served us magnificently in the Second War with Quirm."
"We lost that one, sir."
"But it was a damn close-run thing."
"We still lost, sir."
"What did you do as a civilian, Lieutenant?"
"I was a surveyor, sir, and I can read Clachian. That's why you made me an officer."
"So you don't know how to fight?"
"Only how to count, sir."
"Ha! Show a little courage, man. Although I'll wager you won't need to. No stomach for a battle, Johnny Clachian. Once he tastes our steel, he'll be off."
"I certainly hear what you say, sir," said the adjutant, who had been surveying the Clachian lines and had formed his own opinions about the matter. His opinion was this. The main force of the Clachian army had in recent years been fighting everyone. That suggested to his uncomplicated mind that by now the surviving soldiers were the ones who were in the habit of being alive at the end of battles, and were also very experienced at facing all kinds of enemies. The stupid ones were dead. The current Ankh Morpork army, on the other hand, had never faced an enemy at all, although day-to-day experience of living in the city might count for something there, at least in the rougher areas. He believed, along with General Tacticus, that courage, bravery, and the indomitable human spirit were fine things, which nevertheless tended to take second place to the combination of courage, bravery, the indomitable human spirit, and a 6-to-1 superiority of numbers. It had all sounded straightforward in Ankh Morpork, he thought. We were going to sail into Clach and be in Al-Khali by tea-time, drinking sherbet with pliant young women in the Roxy. The Clachians would take one look at our weapons and run away. Well, the Clachians had taken a good look this morning. So far, they hadn't run. They appeared to be sniggering a lot. Vimes rolled his eyes. It worked, but how did it work? He'd heard plenty of good speakers, and Captain Carrot was not among them. He hesitated, lost the thread, repeated himself, and in general made a mess of the whole thing. And yet, he watched the faces that were watching Carrot. There were the dregs, and some of the Clachians who had stayed behind, and Willikins and his reduced company. They were listening. It was a kind of magic. He told people they were good chaps, and they knew they weren't good chaps, but the way he told it made them believe it for a while. Here was someone who thought you were a noble and worthy person, and somehow it would be unthinkable to disappoint them. It was a mirror of a speech, reflecting back to you what you wanted to hear, and he meant it all. Even so, men occasionally glanced up at Vimes and Ahmed, and he could see them thinking in their separate ways, it must be all right if they're in on it. That, he was ashamed to realise, was one of the advantages of armies. People looked to other people for orders.
"This is a trick," said Ahmed.
"No, he doesn't know any tricks like that," said Angua. "He really doesn't. Oh-oh."
There was a scuffle in the ranks. Carrot strode forward and reached down, bringing up Private Bork and a dreg, each man held by the collar in one big fist.
"What's going on, you two?"
"He called me the brother of a pig, sir."
"Liar! You called me a greasy dishcloth head."
Carrot shook his head. "And you were both doing so well, too," he said sadly.